The Holocaust was horrific in terms of the toll on human life, and it also produced long-lasting cultural erasure. Jewish composers and even Christian composers performing in non-German styles had their music banned. Kennesaw State University music professor Lawrence Schur has dedicated much of his musical career to highlighting these erased composers. He's presenting a program tonight called Songs Not Silenced, Music Forbidden in the Holocaust. One of the composers featured is Ignaz Waghalter. I spoke with Waghalter's grandson, David W. Green, and Lawrence Schur about Songs Not Silenced. Here's Schur talking about why he arranged the concert.
It's important to make a connection, to remember those that were lost in the Holocaust, those whose voices were silenced. And that's where we came up with the title of the concert. Some of the composers in our program survived, some did not. And all of them wrote vocal music. So we thought, what better way to give voice and to make a connection with this music that has been neglected and lost than to have their vocal music performed and to share with the audience some information about that. So I'll be giving some commentary, and David W. Green will also be giving some commentary at the concert about the composers, so the audience becomes acquainted with their stories in addition to hearing their music.
For this upcoming concert, the main composer you are featuring is Ignaz Waghalter. And David, you are his grandson. You've spent years trying to bring your grandfather's music before the public. Would you tell us about that trunk you found?
Well, I was very fortunate in the sense that my grandmother lived with us in Kew Gardens, New York, where I grew up. My grandfather died exactly, and I mean exactly 9 months before I was born. He died in April 1949. I was born in January 1950. My mother loved her father dearly, and there's a recording of her singing in his opera, Ahasuerus and Esther, which he wrote, his last opera he wrote in Vienna in 1937. But as much as she loved him, she believed that his music would never be revived. She had seen all the hardships he had gone through, how difficult the last years of his life had been in so many ways. Of course, one must always recognize when one speaks of this period, my grandfather's music is being sung with the music of Victor Ullmann, who was murdered. At least, as my mother used to say, we were lucky we got out. But he was lost. His music was totally lost. He was totally forgotten. And it was my grandmother who always spoke of my grandfather. And she used to say to me, because we had a large house, and in the where my room was in the attic, there was a small crawl space. And she used to say, there's oben in German, oben im Dach, in the attic, there's all the music. And so I used to go in as a small child, and I was always told, don't go into the crawl space, it's dangerous, you can fall through the floor, it's not all covered. But it fascinated me. And so as a child, it was formed. Also, the area in which I lived was an unusual one. There were many, many German Jewish refugees who remembered my grandfather, who had known him during his great career when he was head of the Deutsche Oper in Berlin. And so this somehow affected me. But it was only later, after my grandmother died and I had left home, and many years later, I asked my mother. She and my father had moved to New York City. They had left the house in 1971. I said, Mom, where's all of Opie's music? Opie is the German diminutive for grandfather. And it's one of these things, I suppose you would have to be a Freudian to even begin to understand how this was possible, given my mother's love for her father, but she had left all the music in the house when they moved out. I couldn't believe it. And the next day, I went out to Kew Gardens. This was 17 years after they had moved out. The house was up for sale. I went to the front door, and the purchasers who had bought the house, my parents, were still there. And I said, do you know anything about a black trunk with music, and they didn't know what I was talking about. I said, do you mind? Could I go up into my room? I know the house. She said, fine. And I walked into that crawl space, and the trunk was still there. And I have written about it. I said, when I opened up the trunk, I felt like Edmond Dantès in The Count of Monte Cristo, how he must have felt when he opened up the trunk. It was all there. I took it back with me to Detroit, where I live, and found so much of the work, which was later to be performed and be rediscovered.
You've said that, of course, it depends on critical ears to appreciate the value of your grandfather's music. You can't solely rely on the dedication of your family in this effort. But what is it about his music that makes it so special?
Well, after this event of finding the music, the Deutsche Oper, which is retains a deep historical interest, and that must be acknowledged. In 1989, they informed us that they were doing a program. They had a series, and it was called Forgotten Contemporaries. And they were going to perform, with just piano accompaniment, selections from his 1917 opera, Jugend, composed during the war.
Means youth.
So I went, and I heard the selections from the opera, and I could not get over the melodic pull of the music. I couldn't get it out of my mind. And I became more convinced that this was not just a matter of what could I do to revive, and that would be legitimate, what could I do to revive some interest in my grandfather's life. But I began to have a feeling that there was something in this music which was significant. I will just say one thing about this, because you asked me about moments which are unusual. When the violin concerto was somehow rediscovered, and I was contacted by this extraordinary young Polish violinist, Ermina Trinkos, who was going to record a sort of debut album, and she wanted to record as a young Polish artist a Polish violin concerto. And she told me she was working with a young British conductor by the name of Alexander Walker, who was going to advise her. Several months later, I got an email, we are going to record the Bach-Calter Violin Concerto with the Royal Philharmonic of London. But this was obviously an enormous breakthrough. And I sat down with Alex. I said, Alex, tell me, why are you choosing this music? I said, what is it like? And he said, well, it's not really like anything I can think of. I said, of course, there are all these different influences, but it is something gripping about this music. And then I asked him, I said, Alex, do you think Ignaz Bach-Calter was a great composer? And he looked at me and he said, yes, he was a very great composer. And of all the shocks I had in my life, that was perhaps the greatest. I had not expected that.
I'd like to add, I think another aspect of that is that there is a renewed interest among people of the current generation in recovering these lost and forbidden voices, in bringing to light, to life, the music of this generation who was suppressed and whose voices were silenced. And I think it's a goal now of many researchers, musicologists, performers, to get in touch with this music, to try to find some shards of what the Nazis tried to destroy, of the culture they tried to exterminate. So much was lost, and there were scores that were burned, paintings and books, as you know, were burned. And it's important for us to not lose that material.
David, why did your grandfather want to start the Negro Orchestra?
I think that, of course, he had himself experienced in so many ways discrimination, prejudice, persecution, and he had I think, because of that, a profound sympathy for all those whom he believed were repressed and persecuted and discriminated against. In 1938, upon arriving in New York, he founded this American Negro Orchestra. It was a huge cultural project. He had been in America, of course, in 1924, 25, and he had known many significant figures in popular music. But he also met a great African-American tenor by the name of Roland Hayes. And when he got back to Berlin in 1925, I'm giving you something as a background, he was interviewed in the Berliner Tageblatt, and he said the next great generation of musicians will be found among American Negroes. This caused a terrible scandal. How dare you say that? And Roland Hayes himself, at his first performance in Berlin, at which my grandfather was present, when he came out on stage, he was booed and shouted. He did nothing. He just waited for the audience to calm down. And then he sang and ended with an ovation. All of this was part of my grandfather's experience. So he decided he was going to form this orchestra. And he went up to Harlem. And I was always told this. He met a black trombonist who was 6'6", whose nickname was Tiny, and helped him recruit musicians. Others involved in this project was Duke Ellington. More left-wing American New York unions were involved to help with the financing, but it was very difficult. In his apartment, he started rehearsing African-American musicians. A petition went around threatening to throw him out of the apartment if this continued. They didn't want to have, he lived on the Upper West Side. They didn't want to have black musicians coming to the building. This is the type of things which went on. In January 1939, he was interviewed by the African-American newspaper of Baltimore. And he says in this interview, music is the citadel of universal democracy. It knows no race, no nationality, no creed. And he believed that his art was a weapon in the struggle against fascism, in the struggle against political reaction, and he was going to use that art as best he could to fight back. And this is how he could fight back as an artist. He believed that he had a responsibility. And in his autobiography, he ends his autobiography with the words, I don't know where my life will take me. Will it take me to Israel? Palestine? Will it take me at the time? They call it Palestine. Will it take me to the ever new United States? But wherever I wind up, I must follow the words of Moses. You were brought out of slavery to serve your people. And he meant by that serving humanity. And that was what, for him, art was all about. And I think that profound democratic element was in his life. It's in his music and his desire to reach people. He didn't so much want to make a statement. He wanted to speak to people's emotions and elevate them through their emotions. And I think that's what explains this remarkable project.
These sentiments that David has just talked about that Ignaz Waldkalter held resonate very profoundly with the work we're doing for this concert, with the goals we have of reaching the audience. It goes beyond mere entertainment, and it goes to connecting with the artist and to providing voices for those that were silenced in a way as to encourage tolerance, respect, and mutual understanding in society, rather than the elements that David mentioned, persecution, oppression, bigotry.
Wow. Thank you for all you're doing to help remove that silence.
Thank you.
You're welcome.